I'm Brandi Cruz, coming up today on Undivided, rugged individualism versus the warmth of collectivism. Plus, Seattle's new socialist mayor wants taxpayers to pay people to daydream. And independent journalists being threatened over their efforts to expose fraud. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, friends, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I missed you guys. On vacation for 2 weeks, felt like an eternity. Usually we always take the last 2 weeks of the year off, and it's just slow, right? Because it's Christmas and New Year's and people are doing things. I've never experienced this much FOMO of the news cycle. And I get it. I was on a beach. I was loving it. I was with my husband. But then there were all these insane news stories dropping. Probably the worst 2 weeks of the year to be off the show. But it means we've had a lot of pent-up news that we can talk about. We won't even get to it all today. We'll have to talk about some of it tomorrow as well. But I did think of you guys a lot on vacation. I thought of two things. My dogs and all of you. And so I'm very happy to be back. We'll see if I can speak today. Usually when I come back from a long vacation, I can't talk good. So a lot happened, including socialists taking over New York and Seattle. And there's been a lot of attention, certainly in the last 2 weeks, on, you know, their takeover and their speeches that they gave when they were sworn in. But there's one clip in particular from Zohran Mamdani in New York City that's getting a lot of attention, but I don't think it's getting the right kind of attention for just how seriously scary it is.
We will replace the frigidity of rugged individualism with the warmth of collectivism.
A lot of people talking about that, from what I saw online, and yes, they express this, I don't know if it's shock, I don't know if any of us should be really shocked that New York City elected a communist, because I don't know that he ever really hid who he was, but a lot of people more so are making fun of him for saying something so outrageous. But if you're not familiar with this phrase about individualism versus collectivism, it is communism. You know, he says he's a socialist, but I think that exposes him for what he is, for as a communist. And who else believed in collectivism? I mean, Lenin and Stalin believed in collectivism. The individual is nothing, the collective is everything. And together they killed as many as 20 million people. Who else spoke like that about individualism versus collectivism? Mao. The interests of the individual must be subordinate to the interests of the collective. Mao killed as many as 80 million people. Mussolini also believed in collectivism. Everything in the state, nothing outside the state, nothing against the state. His policies killed as many as a million people. And you fast forward to 2025 in America, which should be a country completely absent communism. And the largest city in the United States elected a full-blown communist.
We will replace the frigidity of rugged individualism with the warmth of collectivism.
And I think the embarrassment of him saying that, you know, was profound, but I think it took on a new level of seriousness given what happened in Venezuela and the capture of Maduro. And of course, he's been a brutal dictator who also believes in collectivism, who's a socialist. And so here you have, you know, all the Venezuelans I saw, I have yet to see one video from a Venezuelan who was sad that Maduro was captured by the United States. No, there was widespread, I mean, tears of joy and cheering and celebration. So here you have people who are jubilant at being freed from a dictator, while we have voters in the largest city in America electing someone who espouses the same views as that dictator. The views that killed tens of millions of people in the 20th century. Views that led to justification of murder, kidnapping, torture, starvation, rape, re-education camps, views that led people around the world to flee to the United States for their lives. And in the largest city in the country, we have a full-blown communist who very proudly espouses the belief that rugged individualism, something that has made America what it is, the creativity and the intelligence and the motivation of the individual must come second to the collective. And so we saw what happened in Venezuela, and Venezuelans celebrating, crying. I mean, all the videos, I just couldn't stop watching them while I was gone. And then you see the absolute asshat morons in places like Seattle.
Hands up, Venezuela! Hands up, Venezuela! Free President Maduro! La lucha sigue! Libertad, socialismo, o muerte, pensaremos!
Is there anything that better reflects this era of champagne socialism than that? Transgender white dude in a skirt in Seattle, screaming at the top of his lungs about freeing Maduro, a socialist dictator who Venezuelans are happy to be freed from. But some privileged white socialist in Seattle believes that we should free him so he can go back and continue to murder people and kidnap people and force his citizens into poverty and starvation. And it really is, and I said this over the weekend on social media, I think there's only two options for people who support socialism or communism and the people who are marching in the streets in places like California, in Oregon, in Washington, in New York City, in support of Maduro and in support of socialism and communism. I think you're either deeply unintelligent or you're evil. You're deeply unintelligent or you're evil. And those really are the only two options. Because no intelligent person can look at the history of those ideas and say, yeah, that's a good thing. Yeah, let's do that. Or you're evil. And you look at the history of those ideas, forced indoctrination, re-education camps, everyone forced to believe what the government believes. And they say, yeah, let's do that. I don't know which Mamdani is. I don't know which Katie Wilson is. I like to believe Katie Wilson isn't an evil person, but then you look at her and you think, well, the only other option is she's deeply unintelligent. And it's concerning to me that in the United States, and that's why I say of all the stories that happened while we were gone, I cannot get this one out of my head. And we aired an episode of Sundays with Subscribers yesterday, and it just so happened. I mean, we taped this before Venezuela went down. And yes, I mean, we were in this sort of socialism's having a moment, right? We knew that Seattle elected a socialist, New York City elected a socialist. And so we had on and taped before I left for vacation this long interview with State Representative Sean Scott, who's a socialist who represents the area, like Seattle proper, basically, in the state legislature. And he came in to talk about this new tax proposal. But given sort of socialism having this moment, I had asked him during the interview a very simple question about whether he could provide me with an example of socialism actually working.
A good example of socialism working well somewhere, this is a really, really cool question. I think of Cuba in particular, very, very high literacy rate, number one. Number two, extremely strong commitment to public health, so much so that when there are other ailments that are happening throughout the hemisphere, it is oftentimes Cuban doctors that you will see on the front lines of public health administration, their commitment to education. And we look at the fact that we make some of our largest expenditures in healthcare, which is run a lot of ways along a privatized model in this country. And we don't get the outcomes that this small country has been getting for decades. So that's one example that I can think of that would resonate with pretty much anybody in our state who cares about education or healthcare. Would you disagree with that?
People flee on makeshift rafts and die in the ocean to flee Cuba for the United States.
Yeah, and I think that is something that absolutely we have to be sensitive to. But you asked me about institutions that are working really, really well.
I asked you about places socialism is working, and you chose a country that people will risk their lives to flee from to this to this country. There's a reason for that, Sean.
There was a revolution in Cuba. That is correct.
They still do it to this day.
Right.
They show up on the beaches of Miami.
Right.
Because they would rather be here and would risk their lives in shark-infested water to mm-hmm. flee the country that you just gave me an example of.
And if the situation were reversed, the injuries and the ailments that they sustain as a result of migrating to a place where they believe that they're going to be better off, I believe that they could be treated in a much better way than American healthcare facilities are currently able to treat people. So that's one example that I can think of socialism working.
Insane. And I would love to be able to just ignore them, right? And I saw people, we opened up that full episode of Sundays with Subscribers. It's the first one of the year. We thought, Happy New Year, free episode of Sundays with Subscribers, so you could watch that interview with no paywall. And I had a lot of people commenting, I don't want to listen to what the communist has to say. That is a mistake. That is a mistake. A lack of criticality and a lack of paying attention to what communists have to say is how we get someone like Zohran Mamdani as the mayor of New York City. Someone like Katie Wilson as the mayor of Seattle. Is we fool ourselves into believing that they're in such a small minority and they're just so crazy and this could never happen in the United States of America. There are a lot of places who never believed that socialism would become what it became there, that it would turn into communism, that people would die, that people would be kidnapped, that people would be put in re-education camps, that they would be suffering for decades like they suffered in Venezuela. And if you do not believe that that could start to happen here, I mean, in so many smaller ways, you see the way the government has tested us, has tested our obedience, the pandemic being a prime example of that. They are testing how much we are willing to let them get away with. And so to dismiss it and to say, oh, you know, don't even platform the communist, don't even platform the socialist, or to dismiss, and I get it that there's that Seattle, can you play that Seattle protester again? I get it that this is not somebody who you're necessarily going to take seriously.
Hands off Venezuela!
Hands off Venezuela!
Hands off Venezuela!
Hands off Venezuela!
Free President Maduro!
Free President Maduro!
La lucha sigue!
La lucha sigue!
Libertad, socialismo o muerte! Venceremos!
Yeah, and I get it. We could look at that. We could laugh. I did laugh. You could say, you know, transgender person in a skirt, you know, screaming about communism and freeing Maduro and his voice cracking from the testosterone, lack of testosterone or whatever it is. But it would be a mistake to believe that it's just like the cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs people who want to bring communism into the United States of America. And evidenced by that is Sean Scott in Olympia. Seattle's now represented by a full-blown socialist. The mayor of Seattle is a socialist borderline communist. And the mayor of New York City is a communist. And then they bring with them and they put in all facets of government people who share that ideology. And once they start to get their tentacles into government, it is very difficult to remove them. And Jonathan Cho, I credit him with this spot right behind Katie Wilson when she was sworn in and she was speaking the day she was sworn in as mayor, is this guy stands out, red hair, red beard. Well, then a couple days later, he's out with the crazy quote unquote lunatics protesting to release Maduro. And he's standing right behind the brand new mayor of Seattle. So now she's bringing in all the communists into Seattle City Hall, and they're going to be in the transportation department, and they're going to be out there in the housing department, and they're going to be out there in the police department. And they're going to be in all these roles throughout government. And once they're in, they're in. You know how hard it is to fire a government employee? And so I don't want, and that's when I go back to that first clip of Mamdani, where, can you play it again, Nicole? It's so insane, right?
We will replace the frigidity of rugged individualism with the warmth of collectivism.
And people responding with all these memes, and I'm not saying I didn't share any, and all these memes of, you know, the lights of North Korea in darkness, and South Korea with all the lights, and it says the warmth of collectivism, and I get it, it's funny, but it's a reality. That's now a reality for New Yorkers. We're going to talk on the show tomorrow about the plans that Mamdani has to seize private property, essentially, if he doesn't believe that landlords are being good stewards of their own property. You don't think that that's going to come to Seattle? We're already borderline having socialist policies around rent control, et cetera, here. So to dismiss it as cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, I think would be to underestimate the amount of evil and stupidity there is in the United States. and people are struggling and they can't afford to buy a house and they can't afford all these things. So they're promised, oh, the government will do that for you. The government will do it for you. There's this clip from Mamdani. It's probably the second scariest thing that he said while he was giving his inaugural address.
Beginning today, we will govern expansively and audaciously. We may not always succeed, but never will we be accused of lacking the courage to try. To those who insist that the era of big government is over, hear me when I say this. No longer will City Hall hesitate to use its power to improve New Yorkers' lives.
If that doesn't send a shiver down your spine, you need to wake up. For anyone who says the era of big government is over, we'll never hesitate to use the power of City Hall to better people's lives. Yeah, to better people's lives. Like Lenin did, like Stalin did, like Mao did, like Mussolini did, etc., 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 etc. They've never bettered people's lives. There's a reason, Sean Scott, that people flee and risk their lives from places like Cuba so they can come to the United States of America. You don't see anybody fleeing capitalism. You don't see parents waking their kids up in the middle of the night in tears to let them know that they're free from capitalism. It doesn't happen. There's a reason for that. So there's a very scary level of evilness and stupidness in this country that is sending us down a path of communism and socialism, and we don't need to try that experiment again. And so let's not dismiss it as just crazies. Let's not spend too much time making light of it. And let's treat it seriously. I'll play one more clip for you, Katie Wilson, from her address referring to Bread and Roses, the anthem of socialism.
I want to live in a city that honors what you're doing when you're not making money. I want to live in a city that celebrates the labor that people perform voluntarily. A city that values the pursuits that create beauty and community, whether or not they ever turn into careers. A city that thinks that you should have time to read a book and lay on the grass staring up at the clouds. Because we need bread, but we need roses too.
City believes that you should be able to read a book and stare up at the clouds. You can do that. I have plenty of time to do that. I also have a job. This suggestion that, oh, we have to have bread, right? We have to be able to afford the necessities, but we shouldn't have to work so much that we can't, you know, smell the roses. She's setting it up, setting the city up for communism. The idea that, you know, no matter what your contribution is to society, we're all equals. And if you choose, like, oh, you know, the homeless in Seattle do, to sit up at a park and stare up at the sky, we should treat that as just as valuable as someone who's out there contributing to the economy every single day. So on this show, we will treat Katie Wilson and her mayorship with the seriousness and the urgency that it demands. We will treat Mayor Mamdani with the seriousness and the urgency that the moment demands. And I'm sure they'll say some dumb shit that we'll want to laugh at, and I'm sure we will. But we can never forget just how scary this moment is for the United States of America. Wild, wild stuff. All right, we got a lot more to get to, including Governor Bob Ferguson pushing a millionaire tax, why it's a complete scam, and it's time to tell your friends and family that the millionaire's tax will soon become an income tax on every single one of us. The fight to debunk those lies begins today, and it does not stop until the fight is over. First, Valentine Roofing, our wonderful sponsors, just awarded the best roofing company in the Pacific Northwest for a third year in a row. I wanted to let you guys know, I know that we had a couple really tough storms back to back. So if you've had any sort of damage, you know, maybe leaks or something from those storms, you need repairs or replacements, make sure you reach out to our friends at Valentine 206 Roofing, 206 Roofing. And then as we move into colder weather, when it comes to staying warm, and insulated this winter. It starts with your roof and attic. Up to 25% of your home's heat loss is through your attic. So if your furnace is working overtime, it's time to call Valentine. And this is a plus. When you bundle attic insulation with any new roof, you'll save an additional 10% off the entire project. Plus, Valentine has exceptional financing options built around your budget. So no matter what your home needs, you're guaranteed the Valentine experience. Lock in your winter bundle savings. Call 206 Roofing today. Again, call 206 Roofing and please tell them that you heard about them right here on Undivided with me, Brandi Cruz. All right, it was like the worst possible Christmas gift for the taxpayers of Washington State. Governor Bob Ferguson, Mr. I'm a fiscal hawk, elect me as governor, came out and announced that he would support an income tax in the state of Washington, and Democrats have every intention of getting it through this year. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do just that. So we knew this was coming, right? And Democrats have long wanted a tax on income. Washington State treats income as property per our state constitution. And people, it's actually a misnomer that an income tax is against the state constitution. It's not, but it has to be uniform. So if you're going to tax property, in this case, income, then you have to tax it in a way that's uniform, and it's limited to 1%. For some reason, they don't want to try to do that. They want to try to do something that's blatantly unconstitutional. So what they're going to do and what they're going to set out to sell to the populace is, oh, you know, don't worry about us taxing your income. We're only interested in taxing the income of millionaires.
As you all know, Washington has one of the most regressive tax systems in the entire country. We rank 50th, next to last, among the 50 states and the District of Columbia in the fairness and equality of our tax system. I know everybody here in this room understands this, but I want to be really clear to the people of the state of Washington. This means that those who make the least amount of money pay much larger shares of their income than those with the most resources. We are facing an affordability crisis. It is time to change our state's outdated, upside-down tax system to serve the needs of Washingtonians today. To make our tax system more fair, millionaires should contribute more towards our shared prosperity. To be clear, by millionaires, I mean people who make more than $1 million of income in a single year. In other words, it is not individuals whose net worth reaches that amount based on, for example, the value of their home.
Oh, doesn't that sound nice? Oh, none of us are millionaires, so why do we care? Why do we care if the government goes and taxes millionaires, tax the rich, pay their fair share? Well, they're lying to you. They're lying to you. In a moment, I'll debunk all the individual narratives that they're telling and why you should not believe them. And if we allow a millionaire's tax, it's a wolf in sheep's clothing, and pretty soon all of our income will be taxed. But I just had to point out the fact, you know, one of the obvious reasons why all say no to any tax that they want to pass in Olympia is they don't know how to budget. They'll spend money on absolutely anything. The example I always give, because it's an easy example to give, is they spend taxpayer funds on laser hair removal for transgender prison inmates. If you'll spend taxpayer money on that, you don't have a revenue problem. You've got enough money to basically do anything your heart desires. So until they're willing to show that they're going to spend your money wisely on only necessities that the government needs to provide to people, then no, they don't need any more taxes. They're acting like they're in the poorhouse. Our budget has ballooned something like 171% since 1991. That's even when accounting for inflation. Most states' budgets grow in keeping up with inflation. Ours is growing like 3 times the rate of inflation and 9 times the rate of population growth. So we have a spending problem fundamentally. But who do you think that Governor Bob Ferguson blames all of this on? I'll give you one guess. Oh, yes, the bad orange man.
In recent years, the inequities of our state's current tax structure have been exacerbated by increasing income inequality, which is made even worse by President Trump's massive tax cuts for the wealthy. An unprecedented upward transfer of wealth that makes the rich even wealthier while hardworking people are overburdened.
Okay. Again, you can't blame this on President Trump. Washington was in a fantastic budget situation in 2019, and Republicans warned Democrats, you've got to stop spending so much money. You've got to save some stuff for a rainy day, but they just kept spending everything that came in. They're still short, despite the fact we had all these brand new, massive revenue streams. The Climate Commitment Act is fairly new. It's brought in billions of dollars in recent years. The capital gains tax is pretty new. It's bringing in billions of dollars. So you have all these new revenue streams, and you're still in a budget crisis, because you just can't stop spending money. So he comes out and, you know, the media has been a little mixed on this. Some in the media are calling it what it is. It's a tax on income. So they want to tax the income of people who make over $1 million a year, which is blatantly unconstitutional. So again, because you can tax income, property in Washington state, but it has to be uniform. So a first-year law student would be able to understand, or anyone with a computer and Google would be able to understand, that it's blatantly against the state constitution to single out a segment of the populace for taxation in this way. So, but some members of the media, they're calling it an income tax, which it is, but others are feeding into this line, oh, it's a millionaire's tax, it's a millionaire's tax. And Governor Bob Ferguson came out after his press conference and he reiterated a bunch of times, I will not support an income tax for people who make less than $1 million a year. I will not support an income tax for people who make less than $1 million a year. I will not support, I don't believe him. I don't believe him. And what they're trying to do right now, wolf in sheep's clothing, is they're trying to say something, they're trying to push through something that they believe will be palatable to enough voters. But then once it's on the books, all bets are off. I wrote this article, I would encourage you, there's no paywall on it, to go read it on Patreon, Locals or X. Washington's proposed millionaire's tax is a wolf in sheep's clothing. And in it, I answer frequently asked questions. And I saw a bunch of comments that of people who kind of misunderstood what Democrats were trying to do here or the legality of it. And so in it, I have, you know, point by point about exactly what Democrats are trying to do and all the lies that they're telling. So I absolutely encourage you to go read it. But the main point is this. Democrats have wanted a tax on income, just a general income tax on everyone. That has been a public policy position of theirs for as long as I've been a reporter here. And that's been 15 years. And certainly they've tried to get it going back further than that. So all these years, let's just call it 40 years, that they want an income tax. They want an income tax. We're one of 9 states in the nation that doesn't have one right now. We want an income tax. We want an income tax. We want an income tax. And now all of a sudden in 2026, in the middle of budget crisis, they're like, no, we don't want an income tax. We want a millionaire's tax. Why would they just suddenly change their mind after decades of saying publicly that they want to tax your income? Well, they wouldn't. They're just changing their strategy. And they know that the message of tax the rich, make the rich pay their fair share, has worked before. So what Democrats are anticipating is this. They know that it'll face a legal challenge, and they know that it'll likely face an initiative or a referendum. And they believe, and they would not introduce it if they thought otherwise, they believe that this will stand up to both. Now, I'm not going to accuse Democrats of counting votes on the state Supreme Court, but Democrats are counting votes on the state Supreme Court. They would not do this again if they didn't think that they had enough votes on the state Supreme Court. And in fact, we played a clip in December of Joe Fitzgibbon, who's the House Majority Leader. So he's the ranking Democrat in the House, just below the Speaker of the House. And he was saying, oh, you know, well, there's this 100-year-old state Supreme Court ruling that they use to consider income as property. And we just don't think that's valid anymore. So that's what they are expecting the state Supreme Court to do, to rule that income isn't property. Income isn't property, and therefore we can tax it however we see fit. So trust me, they already know that the state Supreme Court will rule in their favor because the state Supreme Court has already upheld an unconstitutional income tax, the tax on capital gains. This is blatant. The tax on capital gains passed in 2021. And capital gains, every other state in the nation and the IRS says capital gains is what? Income. Income. That's how they characterize it. Nope, not in Washington state. In 2023, the state Supreme Court upheld the capital gains tax and said it's not an income tax, it's what? An excise tax. So now, Washington state is the only state in the nation that considers taxing capital gains to be an excise tax and not an income tax. So we don't have to look too far backward to see that the state Supreme Court here, which is packed with progressives, is more than willing to uphold an unconstitutional tax if it'll serve the progressive agenda. So let's just put that aside. Now, the referendum or an initiative. Now, of course, you know, Let's Go Washington, Brian Haywood, they have this initiative process down very well. We're going to talk about the two initiatives that they have now qualified to be sent to the legislature. So I have no doubt that someone would be able to run a successful initiative and gather the necessary number of signatures to get income tax on the ballot. And voters in Washington state always reject income tax every time it's been on the ballot. The issue is it's going to be there as a millionaire's tax, not an income tax. It'll be there as a millionaire's tax. And voters had an opportunity to repeal a tax on capital gains. They didn't. Why? Because Democrats spent $40 million successfully painting it as a tax on the rich. The rich need to pay their fair share so we can fund basic services. So Democrats are very confident that if they can get this passed as a millionaire's tax, the state Supreme Court will sign off on it, voters will sign off on it, and then it is a done deal. Once an income tax is on the books, once an income tax is ruled constitutional, then all bets are off. Then it'll be very easy for them to amend it at will. And I give it 5 years, maybe, before it becomes a tax on every single Washingtonian's income. And so we have to make sure that our friends and family are not falling for this lie that this is just a tax on millionaires. Make sure they know the strategy here, the history here. Ask them, why would Democrats for decades support an income tax and all of a sudden say, no, we just want to tax the income of millionaires? See what they have to say to that. Now, there's one other thing that we have to point out here. If you were keeping the net tax burden for Washingtonians the same, or if you were saying we're going to lower the tax burden for the middle class by passing an income tax and getting rid of all these taxes that have a disproportionate impact on the poor and middle class, like the gas tax and the sales tax, et cetera, then maybe we could have a conversation about it. And that's what Bob Ferguson is saying that they're going to do. Bob Ferguson put out this video on social media, and he's saying we're going to take all the money that comes in from the millionaire's tax, and we're going to use it to reduce other taxes.
We must use those resources to provide tax credits for Washingtonians, to make sure that small business owners pay less in taxes. Those are things we can do with the revenue from a millionaire's tax.
Oh, isn't that nice? Okay, well, if he's going to use, even if we have an income tax, but we're paying less than the sales tax or the gas tax or all these other things, isn't it just a wash? Well, that's what Bob Ferguson's saying he wants to do with the money. Bob Ferguson also ran for office just 2 years ago saying he was going to be a fiscal hawk. And then 3 months into his term, he signed the largest tax increase in state history into law. So he can't be trusted. And Bob Ferguson's office put out this massive press release about the millionaire's tax. And at the very bottom, if you read it, they acknowledge that giving tax cuts in exchange for millionaire's tax probably isn't the same thing, the same agenda as legislative Democrats. So even the governor is acknowledging that that's not what legislative Democrats want to do. They just want to pile it on top of other taxes so they can spend more money. So the bottom line is they haven't earned your trust on anything. Bob Ferguson lost trust within 3 months when he completely became a different person than who he ran as, who he was elected as. And I can't remember in my time any sort of tax cut that Democrats have made in Olympia. In the middle of a budget crisis, you really think if they pass a new tax, they're going to go cut other taxes? Of course they're not going to. And what they do today isn't necessarily what they're going to do tomorrow. So make sure none of your friends and family are falling for it, because eventually this will wind up in front of voters, because Democrats are going to pass it. The state Supreme Court is going to rule it constitutional. And the only thing standing between all of us and an income tax is educated voters. We have to make sure they get there. That segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do just that. Speaking of initiatives, I was so sad we weren't here for this. I was so bummed because, of course, we put so much effort into trying to help the two Let's Go Washington initiatives gather enough signatures. And I am so happy to report that they did. So while we were gone, Let's Go Washington turned in signatures to the Secretary of State's office. Initiative 26-001, which is the Parental Rights Initiative, got 416,000 signatures. The Initiative to Protect Girls Sports, 445,000 signatures, nearly half a million signatures. And I'll tell you, it was touch and go there for a couple weeks in December, where Let's Go Washington people weren't mailing their initiative forms back, and they were freaking out like, oh my gosh, these things aren't going to qualify. And then the last couple weeks around Christmas, oh my gosh, it was like Santa just delivered the worst gift the Washington Education Association has ever received, and the mail just came pouring in. So a huge congratulations to Let's Go Washington that has now shown that if it wants to run an initiative, it can get the signatures for that initiative. And also to the young women on the girls' sports initiative in particular, Annalie Wilson, Frances Stout, who put themselves out there. And there's many, many more. But there was a lot of bravery shown in the last 6 months in particular from people trying to push. I mean, we faced hostile crowds. The girls faced hostile crowds, threats that resulted in the FBI getting called, all so they could protect girls' sports and parental rights. It's just insane. Brian Haywood, of course, who is the leader of Let's Go Washington, said Washingtonians came out, signed the initiatives, and we sent another strong message to Olympia. You bullied the voters, parents, girls athletes with your authoritarian legislation. The only way to respond to an unresponsive bully is to punch back. Today, we punched back. So here's what's going to happen from here. So these are initiatives to the legislature. So they'll be qualified. The number of signatures they got is way over the threshold, and there's plenty of buffer in there for signatures that might not qualify. So these will qualify for the legislature. Everything I've heard is that Democrats aren't going to touch them because they don't want to have to take that vote. Democrats don't want to have to take a second vote on parental rights and give a second middle finger to parents. And Democrats certainly, as much as they'll fight for it behind the scenes, they don't want a vote on the record saying boys should play against girls. They just don't want to put, especially their moderate Democrats that might be in purple districts, in a position like that. So they're not going to touch it. And so this is going to wind up on the ballot, both of these initiatives, in November. The real question for me, I think, is how much of a fight, how much money is the teachers' union really going to be willing to spend on this? So on the parental rights side of things, there was just a, can we get to the I think we have this from Fox News. So on the parental rights side of things, there's kind of things happening. What I want to say is, how much money are they going to spend? Because there's some outside forces that might actually make a decision on these two issues before these initiatives even get to voters. So one of them is the two Supreme Court cases. One of them is the ruling that happened out of California. Federal judge strikes down gender secrecy policies in California public schools. So there was a lawsuit in California, and basically this federal judge said, no, you can't keep secrets from parents. If a kid comes to school and the kid wants to be a boy and they're a girl, it says the class action suit filed by California teachers and parents sought to overturn policies that barred K-12 educators from informing parents when students used names or pronouns different from those assigned at birth. And that's the same policy we have here in Washington State. San Diego U.S. District Court Judge Roger Benitez ruled in favor of two Escondido Union School District teachers who argued that their school district policies flatly prohibit teachers from respecting parents' wishes. The judge wrote, parents and guardians have a federal constitutional right to be informed if their school student child expresses gender incongruence. Teachers and school staff have a federal constitutional right to accurately inform the parent or guardian of their student when the student expresses gender incongruence. So here you have this federal judge in California who's saying, no, schools can't keep secrets from parents. Parents have a federal constitutional right to know. So that is now going to continue to work its way, likely up to the U.S. Supreme Court. And so that could be a case that ultimately just ties the hands of legislators in states like Washington who want to keep secrets from parents. Eventually, they'll probably be forced to have to cease that practice. And then on the girls' sports side, so coming up next Tuesday, the United States Supreme Court is going to hear two huge cases about protecting girls' sports and about, you know, Title IX and the ability of biological boys to compete against girls. So they have West Virginia versus BPJ and Hecox versus Little. There's actually going to be a huge rally on the steps of the U.S. Supreme Court on Tuesday as the Supreme Court session gets underway. And I know the girls from our state who've been advocating to protect girls' sports are going to be there on the 13th. And so you have these Supreme Court cases that really could make the decision for states like Washington. And that's why I wonder, for a couple reasons, if the teachers union here, I mean, the last time there were initiatives, they, not alone, I mean, they had other entities that were also helping, but there was like $40 million spent on opposing the initiatives. How much money are you willing to spend, teachers union, to try to keep boys and girls sports? What a weird thing. Are you going to spend millions of dollars to try to make sure that dudes can be in girls' locker rooms and boys can compete against girls? I mean, I guess I wouldn't put it past them. They probably will, and the teachers union has a ton of money. So is that where you want to spend your money? Like telling parents you don't have a right to know what's happening with your kids? I mean, I guess they probably will, but maybe all of this will be wrapped up by the United States Supreme Court. And I won't say all of this will then have been for nothing. I don't believe that at all. I think it's important for voters here and for these young women to stand up for themselves and to send a message to the legislature at the state level that we don't like what you're doing. We don't appreciate what you're doing. These policies are insane, and we want you to do something different. So we're going to have a super busy legislative session ahead. I mean, it starts on this coming Monday, so a week away on the 12th. And then, you know, I think one thing that we need to be careful about on this show, and I think everyone is, we're so passionate about the initiatives that I think it's easy to focus on those and they're not getting hearings and all of this, and we will, but the taxation issue is probably going to be the issue that's impacting people more in their effort to push through the millionaires tax. So we just all need to be on our A game. We need to be dispelling anything we see online, the lies that are going to be told about the initiatives, the lies that are going to be told about the millionaires tax. If you see a news article online that isn't calling it an income tax like it is, you need to be in there writing to the editor, writing to the newspaper, commenting on Facebook, telling people it's inaccurate, because we are in a war of information. We are in a war of information, and every single one of us has to be a soldier in it. All right, coming up next in our segment, Unbelievable, independent journalists are being threatened with arrest for diving into daycare fraud. Of course, the story that came out of Minnesota. So we'll have what's happening on that, including here in Washington. First, are we in a tech bubble? Are we in an AI bubble? Do you keep hearing those phrases and you're concerned about the strength of your retirement portfolio and the ability of your retirement portfolio to stand up to risk? So if you're just like, I'm not sure, Brandy, I don't know, reach out to our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital. Make sure your portfolio is positioned for these financial uncertainties and just get a second opinion with Zach and his team at Bulwark. You can get that with their free Know Your Risk portfolio review. Zach Abraham and Bulwark Capital are focused on risk management built around the fundamentals of value investing. Bulwark always looks for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So schedule your free Know Your Risk portfolio review today at knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com. While you're there, you can find out how to follow Zach on his YouTube channel, all the other social platforms, and you can also sign up for his daily market recap. So knowyourriskpodcast.com. All right, Democrats want to make it harder for independent journalists to investigate fraud. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. So this again, I mean, how much, I know, Nicole, you suffer from FOMO bad. Nicole suffers from FOMO on everything, right? But as a journalist, I had so much FOMO when the Minnesota Somali daycare scandal broke out. And I'm like, I might have to fly home. I was like ready to cancel our vacation. And of course, Nick Shirley is the independent journalist who broke this. And I was with Nick. I met him at the White House in October. We were on the Antifa roundtable together. And he's such a nice, like, quiet. It's funny because in person, he's very, very quiet. And he's like 23 years old. And here he is. And the number of views, hundreds of millions of views, that this video he produced in Minnesota, where he basically went door to door to places like the Quality Learning Center that had contracts with the state of Minnesota, were getting taxpayer funds to run childcare centers. And there were so many that were being run by Somali individuals. And of course, Somalis in Minnesota have been caught up in all this fraud in recent years in Minnesota. And it looked like a lot of these daycares were just fraudulent, were fronts so people could just steal money. And I'll say it kind of heartened me that that video got so much attention, because you look at all the dumb stuff that goes viral on the internet. And I'm like, I love investigative journalism going viral on the internet. I mean, going viral to a crazy extent. And look, I will say, you know, I can't attest to anyone else's journalistic due diligence except mine. I just can't. And Nick's a great guy. He does great work. I don't know. I mean, were all these daycares fraudulent? Did he connect some dots that maybe shouldn't have been connected? I don't know. I wasn't there. I don't know his journalistic due diligence, but any common sense person watching that video is like, that looks suspicious. You know, can't even spell learning. There's some suspicious stuff going on here. And it turns out it wasn't just in Minnesota. So while we were gone, Jonathan Cho, Ari Hoffman, the Center Square, they took up the mantle in Washington State to look into whether there was similar daycare, childcare fraud happening here in the Somali community or otherwise. And they started to notice that, for instance, you know, some of these Minnesota daycares that Nick Shirley visited were donating money to political candidates in Washington. Which is so strange. I mean, these daycares in Minnesota, in the Somali community, donating money to Somali political candidates all over the country. And we know that the Somali fraud that's already been prosecuted federally in Minnesota, there's some ties to Hezbollah. And so there's all these concerns about, oh my gosh, like, is some of this fraud being used is some of this fraud being used to like fund terrorism and to get Somalis into elected office so they can continue to perpetrate more fraud? Anyway, there's a ton of there. Our friend Jonathan Cho teamed up with the Center Square and Carlene Johnson, and they went out in Washington to try to get some answers on Somali daycares here.
The daycare owner? Is this an actual daycare, or are you aware of the Somali daycare fraud going on? We're just trying to check out if this is a real daycare.
I am U.S. citizen. I am working now.
Yeah.
Okay? I work. Okay? You don't have to trespass to come to my home. That's not right to come.
Where are all the children? If you have a daycare, where are all the children?
I don't have to tell you what I have, what I don't have.
Are you a legitimate daycare?
I have a daycare there. Okay?
Can you show me proof you're a daycare?
I'm not proving anything for you. Are you government?
And look, I guess you don't have to. If a dude shows up at your home where you're running a daycare with a camera, do you really have to talk to him? I guess no. I guess there's no law. But if you're running a legitimate daycare, certainly it would be easy to prove. And Cam Higby, Jonathan Cho, Carlene Johnson, they did more than just show up at some of these places. I mean, they were digging into the numbers and talking to neighbors who say, I've never seen any kids at this house. So there's clearly something also going on in Washington State with some of these Somalis who are supposed to be running daycare organizations. And so they're out there doing the work that the legacy media won't do. And look, sometimes journalism is ugly. Sometimes journalism is uncomfortable. Sometimes journalism means going and knocking on doors. That's what you do. And it used to be a widely accepted practice. And I know that because I was in TV and I hated it. I hate it when it's like, you got to go door knock today. Like, you got to go, you know, knock on the door of someone who's accused of murdering their wife. It's like, great, you know? So knocking on doors and surprising people or chasing them down to ask for comment, that's something journalists do, or they did. And so if your complaint is that Jonathan or Cam Higby or Nick Shirley are putting a camera in people's faces, journalists have been putting cameras in people's faces for as long as journalists have had cameras. It's just this asinine thing that, oh, you're harassing people. You used to celebrate that. If it was a legacy news station, you'd be giving them a Pulitzer Prize. So they're out there doing this, and they get basically threatened by government officials who are calling it a hate crime. So the new mayor of Seattle, Katie Wilson, and the attorney general of the state of Washington put out statements about this. Katie Wilson said, I stand with the Somali childcare providers who have experienced targeted harassment, and I condemn the surveillance campaign promoted by extremist influencers. If you believe yourself to be the victim of a hate crime, please call this hotline. How many times have the leftists drawn swastikas all over things? You think she's sending something out saying, if you're the victim of the hate crime? No, it's a hate crime. If a journalist asks someone who's contracted with the state to provide a service and given taxpayer funds, it's a hate crime to ask them when there's ample evidence of their community perpetrating fraud? I guess according to Katie Wilson. And look, Katie Wilson is a lunatic, but then there's the Attorney General of the state of Washington. My office has received outreach from members of the Somali community after reports of home-based daycare providers being harassed and accused of fraud with little to no fact-checking. I haven't seen one video where anyone shows up with a camera and accuses someone of fraud. Jonathan's asking questions. Hey, can you provide us with information to show you're a legitimate daycare? Nick Brown said families regarding the claims being pushed on or and okay. We are in touch with the State Department of Children, Youth, and Families regarding the claims being pushed online and the harassment reported by daycare providers. Showing up on someone's porch, threatening or harassing them, isn't an investigation. Neither is filming minors who may be in the home. This is unsafe and potentially dangerous behavior. I encourage anyone experiencing threats or harassment to either contact local law enforcement or our office's Hate Crimes and Bias Incident Hotline. If you think there's fraud happening, there are appropriate measures to report and investigate. Go to the Department of Children, Youth, and Families website to learn more. Ah, yes. We should go to the state to investigate the fraud that the state is allowing to happen. Great idea. No, journalists are around to investigate fraud. That is the appropriate way to do it. We're the fourth estate. We're supposed to hold people in power accountable. They're clearly not holding themselves accountable. And this idea that showing up on someone's porch isn't an investigation. It literally is. And I would ask you, how would you conduct an investigation? You'd probably show up on their porch too. And you'd get further if you were doing it. The journalists wouldn't have to do it because they'd have to open up their doors for you so you could judge whether they're a legitimate daycare center. But you're not doing it, so the independent journalists are doing it. And it's a hate crime because the people contracted with the state are Somalian? Wild. Harmeet Dhillon, the Assistant Attorney General of the United States, who we had on the show a couple weeks ago, she fired back. She said, any state official who chills or threatens to chill a journalist's First Amendment rights will have some explaining to do. Civil rights takes potential violations of federal code seriously. Govern yourselves accordingly. And there were several individuals from the Department of Justice who put Attorney General Nick Brown and Seattle Mayor Katie Wilson on notice to say, you know, you're basically threatening to charge journalists with a crime. You're threatening to charge journalists with a hate crime if they show up asking questions of someone whose skin isn't white. It's okay, how would you like them to investigate it? What would make you comfortable? It's like, no, in this case specifically, the element of surprise is necessary. I mean, if someone believes, anyone, white, black, whatever it is, believes that, you know, they know they've committed fraud, right? And they believe they're going to get caught for it, or that someone's looking into it, what are they going to do? Immediately cover their tracks. Immediately. If I committed fraud and I got wind that someone's looking into it, I'm covering my tracks immediately. And so, yeah, calling and saying, hey, this is Jonathan Cho. I'm an independent journalist. I was just going to swing by your house. When's a good day and time for you? And I want to look into whether you're a legitimate daycare. Yeah, that'll get the job done. Great. I mean, these people are just unintelligent. It gets worse than that, though. So there's right after the Somali daycare story broke in Minnesota and these independent journalists across the country decided we're going to look into it in our states, too. State Senator Lisa Wellman filed a bill for this coming session in Olympia, Senate Bill 5926. The bill's purpose is this. It says it's an act related to expanding the public records exemption for personal information of family home child care providers. So the bill literally seeks to hide certain right now publicly available information on child care providers. Gee, why do you think she's going to do that? Because she wants to make it more difficult for independent journalists to investigate whether there's fraud, whether there's theft of taxpayer funds. Isn't that the same lady, the same senator who introduced the bill to take it easy on child sex predators who were caught up in net nanny stings because her friend, a constituent's son, got caught up like trying to meet what he thought were small children that were going to be sold by their mom like for sex? Yeah, so her track record's a little shaky as it is, but now she wants to hide information. So it's harder for a journalist to investigate fraud. Unbelievable. All right, Tim Walz. You guys know I'm from Minnesota, right? So I feel a special relationship with all these stories coming out of Minnesota. Tim Walz is out. He's not leaving office, at least not yet, but he's not going to be running for a third term. We'll discuss that in National first. It is a new year. Are you thinking in 2026 that you might make a move? Maybe you're thinking about moving to a different neighborhood, a different community, across the street, a bigger house, downsizing, or maybe you're going to get out of Dodge entirely before the communist revolution takes hold. Reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com if you're thinking about selling your home in 2026. And Wes is great. He gets so many five-star reviews from undivided viewers and listeners. And Jay says, truly a five-star experience from start to finish. Wes and his team are all about relationships, authenticity, and results. Over 3 years, Wes guided me through renovations, referred great contractors, and helped me make smart choices. When it was finally time to sell my childhood home, they staged it beautifully, hosted open house that felt like neighborhood events and brought in 200 plus people. We got four offers and sold $400,000 over asking. You won't find a better team. And I might be biased, but I do have to agree that you won't find a better team than our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. So that's the first step. Just go to sellwithwes.com. They have a handy tool in there where you can plug in your address and find out what your home's value is. It might be worth more than you think. And then from there, ask Wes for a free market analysis and sort of get his thoughts. It's never too early to start the process of figuring out, you know, what is the market looking like? What's the best time to sell my home? And what might I have to do to it to get the most possible value out of it? So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, Tim Walz. I don't blame it. So first of all, I don't think any governor should serve three terms. One person leading a state for 12 years. You're telling me after 8 years, there's no one else. Like when Jay Inslee did it, I'm like, there's no one other than Jay. But this is party politics. And once there's a person in the position, until they decide that they're going to bow out, then the Democrats won't have anyone challenging them. So I really don't think ultimately it's fair to voters. So Governor Walz, under all this pressure with the Somali fraud, which has been going on for years, by the way, this is just a new wrinkle of it. He came out, he posted a statement this morning. Minnesota has to come first, always. Today, I'm proud of the work we've done to make Minnesota the best place to live and raise kids. I've decided to step out of the race and let others worry about the election while I focus on the work. He then quickly held a press conference to explain his decision and blame the nasty right-wing influencers and the bad orange man.
For the last several years, an organized group of criminals have sought to take advantage of this state's generosity. And even as we make progress in the fight against the fraudsters, we now see an organized group of political actors seeking to take advantage of a crisis. I don't want to mince words here. Donald Trump and his allies in Washington and in St. Paul and online want to make our state a colder, meaner place.
Oh, God.
They want to poison our people against each other by attacking our neighbors. We've got Republicans here in the state legislature playing hide and seek with potential whistleblowers. We've got conspiracy theorist right-wing YouTubers breaking into our daycares, demanding access to our children. We've got the President of the United States demonizing our Somali neighbors and wrongfully confiscating funds that Minnesotans rely on. It's disgusting and it's dangerous. Republicans are playing politics with the future of this state. It's shameful. Every minute that I spend defending my own political interest would be a minute I can't spend defending the people of Minnesota against the criminals who prey on our generosity and the cynics who want to prey on our differences. So I've decided to step out of this race, and I'll let others worry about the election while I focus on the work that's in front of me for the next year.
Okay, fine. And it's fascinating, though, to consider he was just the vice presidential candidate for Democrats. And now here he is at a podium saying, I'm not going to run again because of all this stuff going on. The fraud is real. And it's like, you can blame a conspiracy theorist influencer when he just like goes door to door and he shows you, this is what I'm seeing. Like, you can make up your own mind about it, but no kids here, middle of the day, right? You can blame all these people, but as he even acknowledged himself, the fraud has been rampant in Minnesota for many years, much of it perpetrated by the Somali community. Dozens of them have been prosecuted federally. So it's not as if it's just made up. And you are responsible for that. But you're trying to make people focus more on, criticize, you know, the YouTuber, the president, as opposed to criticize you. And to me, you're getting off lucky. I mean, you should be resigning. That much fraud, you should be resigning. Just like I thought Jay Inslee should have resigned over the was it Nigerian scammers who stole all of our unemployment benefits? No one was fired over that. It's like, what is it, $500,000 or $500 million? No one was fired over that. So Tim Walz, you should be resigning. So you're really taking the coward's way out by just saying, nah, I'm not going to run again, and blaming a YouTuber, a 23-year-old YouTuber. just wild. So who is going to be the next governor of Minnesota? I would be surprised if it's a Republican. As I said, I am from Minnesota. Lived there for the first 18 years of my life. Almost all of my family, except my sister, live in Minnesota still. And it has become a bluer and a bluer place. And a lot of them really don't like Donald Trump for whatever reason. So it'll probably be a Democrat. And it seems like Senator Amy Klobuchar is getting the baton. So the New York Times reports that prior to coming out and making the announcement today, Governor Tim Walz and Amy Klobuchar met on Sunday. So it says Mr. Walz and Ms. Klobuchar met on Sunday in Minnesota, where he informed her of his plans and she confirmed her interest in running to succeed him. For Mr. Walz, the Democratic nominee for vice president in the 2024 election, the departure caps a brief rise in national politics. Yeah, I think that brief rise is done now. I think it's over. You know, so I'm interested, I think, because of all the fraud that's happening there. I do believe that there has to be at some point consequences for these politicians, you know, who there's no oversight happening. And he acknowledges, like, we've been fighting the fraudsters for years. Okay, so you've been fighting the fraudsters for years. And there's still people perpetrating wide scale fraud in your state. Maybe you shouldn't be the leader of the state. Maybe you should go to jail. At what point do politicians go to jail? And I'm not saying, like, look, there is going to be fraud that happens in every state, red state, blue states, whatever it is. But if you know, and that was the instance in the Somali fraud, the government knew, and there were whistleblowers coming forward saying all this fraud is happening in the food programs and the autism programs, and they buried it. Why? Because of the race of the people involved. That's not from me. That's from the New York Times. Because of the race of the people involved, they didn't want to be called racist. So when you know the fraud is happening and you look the other way, that's when I think that you should be punished for it. I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll on Patreon, Locals, and X about what's happening with the Somali fraud and the federal government's response to it. So the Trump administration, Kristi Noem, they're coming out and saying that for individuals who are convicted of defrauding taxpayers who have been naturalized U.S. citizens, they're going to look at denaturalizing them. So, like, if you're a Somali citizen, if you're came here from Somalia to Minnesota, and you became a naturalized U.S. citizen, but then you were convicted of stealing taxpayer funds in one of these schemes, they're saying, like, we're going to send you home. You're not going to be a U.S. citizen anymore. So I asked subscribers, should naturalized citizens who steal taxpayer funds, who are convicted of stealing taxpayer funds, be denaturalized by the United States of America? Nicole.
Hey.
Hey. Yes or no?
So I'm going to say yes, based on what I know so far, because, I mean, you take an oath when you become naturalized and you say that you're going to uphold the Constitution and the laws of this country. And so you're going back on that. So you're going back on that oath, then I think there should be some consequence to that. However, I probably need to know more about the laws of a naturalized citizen and how you can take that back as a country. Yeah. I'm not sure.
Because there's obviously a process, right? You can denaturalize someone for a reason, you know, if they were misleading or lied as part of the process, right, or whatever it is. Yeah, I mean, look, U.S. citizens can do much worse, right, and keep their citizenship. You can't, if you're born here, like, they can't take it away. I could be a mass murderer, and until mm-hmm. the day I die, I will be a U.S. citizen. But it's different because it was a privilege to be able to become a U.S. citizen from another country. You spit on that privilege in the worst way imaginable mm-hmm. by stealing from the people who gave you a better life.
And you didn't take an oath when you were born. So
right.
You're not really
That's
taking an oath.
I didn't violate any oath when I came out of the womb.
Right.
82% of you say yes, that they should be denaturalized by the United States.
I mean, that's course, after they serve their prison term, if this right. is what they're doing.
Yeah, I heard a lot of people saying that. Well, there was a difference of opinion. Some people were saying we want them to serve their time, so there's right. a consequence. But then some people like KM said, I don't want to pay for their prison term. Just get them out of here. I guess it would depend how much it is. Like, how much time are you spending in federal prison? Should we just get you out of here if it's like 6 months or something like
well,
that?
Well, give back the money and maybe you can get out a little sooner.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go.
Robert Parr, I do believe so. Each case should be thoroughly examined. I believe there is a high probability that irregularities or fraud are involved in the individual's naturalization process. So that's that's a good point. If you defrauded taxpayers as soon as you got here, what are the chances that you defrauded the United States in the process mm-hmm. of coming here? Yeah. Mountain Mama says 100% deport. Let me see here. Weiss Castle. I'm all on board with a choice. Years in prison or deportation as a former citizen, with the understanding that if you're caught on U.S. soil again, it would mean immediate imprisonment. So yeah, maybe you say, hey, you can serve this prison term or you can lose your U.S. citizenship. That would be a choice, right? Mm-hmm. Like, let's say it's 8 years for perpetrating millions of dollars in federal fraud. 8 years in prison or you go back to Somalia. What would you choose, right? I mean, I would obviously choose 8 years in prison because I'm not going back to Somalia. I've never been to Somalia. But for them, I mean, they'd probably go back. They'd probably leave the country and go back. Mm-hmm. Let me see here. Andy says, I voted yes because there are 19 members of Congress that are naturalized citizens. Hold them accountable. I didn't know that many members of Congress were naturalized citizens. That's an interesting statistic. Mm-hmm. Salty, I said no. A naturalized citizen is a citizen. However, if the fraud was committed before naturalization occurred, I believe this would void their naturalization and then they should be sent packing. Yeah, so I think there are some differences there, but a lot of you are saying no. All right, we'll get to comments from the live stream coming up next. Catch up with Nicole about what she did on vacation. Mm-hmm. I can tell you guys about what I did besides gain 8 pounds on vacation.
It's water weight, I'm sure.
I hope so. Anyway, firstmarkinsurance.com. It's a new year. I think, I know in my family, we're evaluating our budget, looking at our priorities for the year from a budgeting perspective, maybe where we can save some money. And so looking at your insurance is a really good place to start. And we hear from Undivided viewers and listeners all the time who have taken the First Mark Challenge. The number one thing they always say is, why did I wait so long to do this? We have viewers who are saving hundreds of dollars a month. Christine is saving $10,000 a year by taking the First Mark Challenge because she has a really complicated insurance policy. She's got two businesses, a house, three cars. And they're like, yeah, we can save you $10,000 a year and your insurance will be just as good. And so that was, I mean, $10,000 a year. What would you do with that? So there's just no reason not to take the First Mark Challenge. First, you're supporting a company that supports our show. Second, it's totally free. You never pay First Mark anything for their services. And you could walk away from that process saving thousands of dollars a year. So that would be a great way to start 2026. So schedule time to take the First Mark Challenge today. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance company. So they're always going to have your best interest in mind. All right, Nicole, you want to join me for comments? I know people haven't seen you in quite a while. She's here.
People were thinking I was going to have a tan, but actually, I mean, I went to Arizona for a couple days, but it wasn't really to lay out. It's a little, it's not that hot down there right now. But I had a great break. I visited with people that were in from out of town. I feel like I kind of ran all over visiting and chatting with people and seeing people I hadn't seen for a while. And then, went to Arizona for a couple days and
It felt long.
It did feel long. It felt like I muted you. It felt like I accomplished a lot. Like we got a lot of things done that normally our minds are elsewhere on. So I feel like I spent quality time with people.
Yeah, spending quality time with my husband was good for both of us because we both work way too much. But we've decided I hate being on vacation without my dogs. Hate it.
I was actually thinking about your dogs a lot too. I was like they're all by themselves during the fireworks. I was thinking of back at the fireworks.
Well, they had a nice dog sitter, but we went to the Bahamas for 3 days because we just went to visit Miranda in Miami. She moved into a house and we wanted to see that. But we're like, let's take this fast ferry over to Bimini in the Bahamas. Would never do it again. Fast ferry was a dump. The Bahamas is way overpriced. It's like tourist trap. And I was like, once we got back to Miami, Fort Lauderdale, I was like, this is much better.
I kind of thought the same when I went to the Bahamas.
I was not impressed.
It was not worth it.
Don't waste your money. Sorry, don't waste your money. Then I almost bleh on the fast ferry.
To the Bohemian people.
They were very nice. They were very nice. But Mike and I had dinner one night at this place. Nothing special, right? It was $258 for two of us for dinner. We only had one drink each, right?
What?
$258. And I was like, what? And then we go to a nice dinner in Miami where we knew it was going to be expensive, right? Mm-hmm. Ordered whatever we wanted. It was like kind of our last hurrah. And it was the same price. I was like, do you realize this is the same price as that dinner that we had in the Bahamas that was like horrible? Don't go to the Bahamas. Don't waste your money. But anyway, no offense. And I'm glad we got out. I'm glad we got out when we did because then the Maduro thing happened and people couldn't get out of like the Caribbean, the Bahamas. It was a whole mess. So anyway.
Crazy.
All right. Old sub Mike Dean. Oh, and also it's Miranda's first day as a full-time employee of Undivided.
Yeah, she's in there.
Yay, Miranda. She's going to be working a lot on social media, trying to grow our social media presence and all of those things. So a huge thank you to subscribers who paid to support the show, and the growth of subscribers and our advertisers has allowed us to hire Miranda full time to help with social media. So Nicole and I don't know, don't have to work 22 hours a day. Old sub Mike Dean says, yeah, $20 super chat. The militant gender queer far left is the greatest danger to our way of life today. Pure communism. They are well organized in planning for 2026 and 2028. They are well organized. That's the thing, that's scary. I always tell people, you got to come out to these events, you got to do things, you got to get involved, because people like that are getting involved. So the people who show up are the people who win.
I know people want to check out of just watching the news. No. I'm sorry, you've got to be aware.
Can't do that. Wes Motorsport 106, when you indoctrinate kids in public school to be ignorant, electing communists is what we get. Yep. Salty, collectivism means you will all suffer together. Yes, we'll suffer collectively. Mm-hmm. Let me see. Sharon, Cubans floating on trash away from the warm collectivism. Yes, warm. Fleeing the warm collectivism.
I mean, the temperature is hot.
Oh, Teresa Trulio makes me tear up watching the Venezuelan people cheer. What a victory for those people. Yeah, I was just like doom scrolling all the videos of them, because it happened in the middle of the night, mm-hmm. and them waking up kids or their loved ones to tell them, and just their shock. I couldn't stop watching those videos. All right, Ferguson's millionaire tax scam. Chardy Jensen. Okay, somebody try. Okay, I don't know if I pronounced that wrong. I get it. Make fun of me. Ha ha ha. It amazes me how Democrats twist, lie, and spin so eloquently and effortlessly. It amazes me how effortlessly people believe it.
Well, and if you realize, he says, well, I know most people in this room are smart, but I'm going to tell the dumb people at home how this is working, how they're getting taxed more. But really, he doesn't really explain it. And it's because, you know, you buy stuff, you pay tax. Like, so of course, it's, you know, you're buying similar things. Yeah. You're buying similar gas, all the, you know, groceries, whatever. So that's, people take it as, oh, I must pay a higher percentage on a specific tax than the rich people.
Yeah, and don't. It's just a higher percentage of what you have.
Because you have less money or whatever. But anyway, he talks to people like they're stupid. And then he the way that they're just pushing this millionaires tax. I mean, it's so obvious that their strategy there.
Yeah. And they do think people are dumb enough to believe it.
Absolutely.
And I'll be honest, people believe the capital gains thing. So I'm not calling people dumb. I mean, you guys aren't dumb. We're all highly intelligent here. You, us, and humble. But there are a lot of people who buy that. Tax the rich. It's just insane.
And they just believe they're people.
Yeah. Wild. On the initiatives qualifying, Matthew Cook, welcome to Washington, where we need an initiative to support biology. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Brian Haywood has to spend millions of dollars to try to say no boys and girls sports. The last Robespierre, it's a sad state of affairs. The kids can't even read or do basic math, but the teachers union believes this is the most pressing issue. Mm-hmm. 100%. On the independent media being threatened with hate crime charges for going door to door. Yeah. Milkman, they are most likely just taking care of their own kids, claiming it's a daycare and raking in the money. Yeah, and I think there are some ways in which you can take care of, like, your, you know, neighbors or friends or family. But the issue here is, how much money are they getting per child? How much do they say they have, right? How many children do they say that they are watching every single day versus how many are they? And there are some clear examples from Cam Higby and Jonathan Cho's reporting where they talked to neighbors who said, I've never seen a daycare
and they were operating out of that place. Licensed for 60 kids, right, and they've never seen a kid in the neighborhood.
Yeah, come on. Let's just be smart about it. It's obviously a problem. There's obviously something going on. And just the fact that journalists have to go do the work because the state hasn't, that's problematic too. There should be no question whether there's a daycare somewhere, right?
And part of the, I mean, it's an obvious cover up because some of these daycares, they had pointed out, had been fined by the state and had been, you know, investigated before. Yeah. So all these people we're sending out investigators and they're seeing no kids. They see a jacket hanging on a hook and they're like, oh, there must be a kid here somewhere. I just can't see him.
Well, it was like the Quality Learing Center.
Right.
Did you see the day after?
Yep.
So this whole thing and all the media is trying to debunk Nick Shirley rather than trying to debunk or prove or disprove the fraud.
I know. He was like, he's like, I'm a good kid. I'm 23. I don't drink and I'm a virgin.
Yeah.
Go for it.
He's like, I have nothing. So they're trying to vilify Nick Shirley and they're willing to believe whatever will do that, right? Yeah. So the Quality Learing Center. So Nick Shirley's there and he goes there around 1:30 p.m. And people say, well, on the door, it says it's open 2 p.m. to 10 p.m. So I saw that. I'm like, okay, maybe he just went at the wrong time and it wasn't even open. And then the state says the next day, oh, the Quality Learning Center told us they were closing down several weeks ago, so they're not operational anymore. The day after that, all of a sudden, there's dozens of kids. The parking lot's full at 8 a.m. They're like, we're open. We're busy. Everybody's like, well, wait, the state said you were not operational anymore. And then people were saying that Nick Shirley was in the wrong because he came before 2 p.m. and you're not open till 2 p.m. But now all these kids are streaming in at 8 a.m. It's like, and then the media is like, yep, we've disproven it. I'm like, no, they just brought in a bunch of kids. Yeah, they just brought in so their obvious. Friends' kids. Like, how can you fall for that? Said, it's crazy. Yeah, a couple other super chats. Jack Hart, glad to have the show back and new episodes. Can't wait for your work exposing fraud in our state. I always worry that whenever we take like one day off, I'm like, people won't watch the show anymore. I'm just like, so I'm glad that you guys give us the breathing room to be able to take a couple weeks off at the end of the year. Rick Eckert, $10 super chat. Happy New Year to help pay for all the new Miranda expenses. Yes, we appreciate that. Good stuff. Okay, Nicole,
I also saw Sergeant Pinkle said, Happy New Year. Positive note, my wife and I are expecting our fourth kid.
Oh, that's great.
Not letting the fear of the future control us.
Good. Not too worried about climate change. Yeah, good. I'm glad.
Children. Yeah, so oh, that's congratulations. Awesome.
Congratulations to you. What do you, Sergeant Pickles? Yeah. What do you name your kid when your screen name's Sergeant Pickles? We'll find that out. Dill. Yeah, it's a big dill. All right, Nicole, thank you. And with that, we'll get to our closing sanity check. I don't know. I think I talked okay today. I have such a hard time coming back from vacation talking. It's like I forget to do the how to do the show. Mm-hmm. I can't string sentences together. It was all right. You know, it was all right. We'll get
I feel like you were planning
off.
It the whole time you were gone because there was so much going on.
Oh, yeah. There was no shortage of material. And tomorrow, just in case you're curious, before I get to this clip, we will talk about the Seattle Police Department coming out and saying they're now decriminalizing drugs again because there's a new city attorney. There's a new mayor. They're both commies. And they don't want people to be arrested for drug abuse. So any progress we made under Harrell is going to be immediately, under Harrell and Ann Davison, immediately washed away. Mm-hmm. And the new, you know, woke chief is like, this is just fine. No big deal. We're going to put people toward diversion. And that's fine as long as you actually help them. But that's the problem is that diversion, there's no teeth to it. So anyway, we will talk about that on the show tomorrow. We just had so much stuff to catch up on in our closing sanity check. So Katie Wilson, the new Seattle mayor, as she was giving her inaugural address, this is the epitome of people who believe that any attention is good attention.
I had the honor of being noticed by the President of the United States, who called me a very, very liberal / communist mayor. It's nice to feel seen.
Ah, yes. Cheer on the communist. Oh, it's nice to feel seen as a communist. We're doomed. Gosh, we're doomed. We're doomed. That has been our first episode of 2026, our closing sanity check in today's episode of Undivided. As always, if you watch the show, if you listen to the show on a regular basis, if you find value in it, you know, I think one of the things the Nick Shirley thing has shown us is that really people have a hunger for, you know, investigations of fraud. I think we're going to try to do more of that in 2026 on the heels of our whistleblower report into the community reinvestment program. So if you find value in what we do, please consider supporting it. That's how we continue to grow. So go to UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. It's $5 a month. I think that's a pretty good deal. You can participate in our daily show polls, watch our episodes of Sundays with Subscribers, etc. So appreciate all of you. Miranda, happy first day at Undivided. Happy to have you on board. And yes, that is nepotism. It is nepotism at its finest.